I don't know about the rest of you, but I love this time of the day. I love how the cool, crisp night air kisses the ground, leaving behind a gentle layer of dew. I love looking up into the night sky and seeing the moon shining down upon us like an old, trusted friend. I look forward to spending our Thursday nights here together on Blog Talk Radio as we travel together on this journey into the night.
Show. We're so excited to be here with you, and we're excited about the guests we're bringing on. So it's going to be a great show. Looking forward to it.
It sure is. Well, this our guest is all the way over in London, England. Because of the time issue, this is a pre-recorded show, so unfortunately you will not be able to call in and speak with her, but I know we're going to have fun regardless. Looking forward to it, as Lisa said. First of all, Lisa, are you freezing as much as I am? It's not supposed to be cold in the south.
Yes, it's very cold. I'm going to tell myself, I'm in my pajamas with a house coat on, with house shoes, and I'm just bundled up. Just got through with homeschooling, so... doing the show.
Yep, I've got the heater on underneath my desk, so my tootsies are warm. If my tootsies are warm, you see the rest of me's okay.
Right.
But yeah,
that's true.
It's supposed to be even colder tomorrow, and then it's supposed to warm up again in the 70s. I tell you, if we don't all end up sick, it's going to be amazing. This up and down temperature.
I know. I know, it's crazy. I mean, we had a warm Christmas, like Christmas Day, I believe. It was warm and it was raining, but it was warm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we woke up this morning and it was freezing cold. And so I had to go out to feed the horsies because they don't care how cold or hot it is. They want to be fed.
That's right. Oh, it's funny. I had to die laughing, though. Last night, I saw a YouTube video of that poor woman trying to take her trash on the icy driveway, and she kept trying to put her bag of trash in the dumpster, and she kept sliding down the driveway. I was going,
oh, yeah.
Been there, done that before. That's one thing I like about living in Southeast Texas. At least I don't have to put up with that kind of stuff.
That's true.
Anyway, let's get going and bring our guest on, because I tell you what, this is going to be fun. Tonight, we're going to have a little Southern Gothic horror with Eden Roy. Now, Eden, she's descended from women who practiced root, a type of conjure magic in her native Charleston, South Carolina. She's been a bridal consultant, reptile handler, a stockbroker, but now writes dark fiction about the American South from her home in the English countryside. She is the author of Spook Life, Southern Gothic Horror, a short story collection that features the language and traditions of the Gullah Geechee, she's going to have to tell me how to pronounce it because I know I just killed it, descendants of the first slaves brought to the Sea Islands off the coast of South Carolina and Georgia. She also conceived and edited The Grotesque Query, an anthology of 21 horror short stories written by women. Ian also writes for the Los Angeles Review of Books, Graveyard Shift Sisters, a site dedicated to purging the black female horror fan from the margins, and Dirge, the premier dark culture magazine covering counterculture art and entertainment, lifestyle, and editorials. Now, we've got all her social media links right here on the show for you to find. We've got her website, Twitter, Facebook, and BookPub. So why don't we give Eden a nice, warm, Deadly Reads welcome. Hello, Eden. How's it going today?
Hello,
hello there, ladies. How are you?
Doing fine. I'm sure I slaughtered a few of those words in your bio. I'm sorry.
That is quite all right. It happens. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's our honor and our pleasure completely. We are looking forward to this. I tell you, your bio is very intriguing. And so I have to say, I was rather interested in the idea of what it is you write about and everything. So I'm looking forward to getting this interview started. Okay, first of all, can you tell us how you got involved with writing horror and dark fantasy?
I've always been attracted to horror and dark fantasy when I read, when I watch movies. When I was growing up, one of the things that I loved to do with my mother and my grandmother was watch those Sunday afternoon black and white horror movies. We're talking Wolfman and Dracula. All those things would come on sort of Sunday afternoons when I was young. And it was something that I was always drawn to, just the mystery and the mystique of it. And I also grew up around root workers and hoodoo practitioners, which a lot of people kind of saw that background as creepy and strange in and of itself. But for me, it was much more normal. So it was a way for me to portray that lifestyle as a little bit more mainstream and have the horror come from something outside the hoodoo culture.
I do want to ask one question though before we really get into this really neat. How did a Southern gal end up over in London?
I actually met my husband, and he decided he couldn't live without me, so I packed up and moved over to London, or moved over to England, technically.
Awesome. Because when you read in your bio about how you write, you know, Southern Gothic horror in the countryside of England, it just paints a whole contradicting picture, you know, for the mind, you know.
You know, it's funny because I do live in the countryside. I'm not in the middle of the city of London. So looking outside of my back door is much more lots of back gardens. And if I go on a walk around the neighborhood, I'll end up in fields and horse stables and things like that. So it definitely is the countryside. So it isn't too incredibly different. So there's a little bit of that feel of the American South in parts of England where I live, so it's not too much of a departure.
Okay. Now, can you explain what Southern Gothic is?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. There are lots of definitions, and with every genre of writing, I think people have really preconceived notions about what it is. But for me, Southern Gothic is about embracing the strange and the grotesque. it's that sort of saying that they have that says Southerners don't hide, they're crazy, they parade it out on the front porch. Mm-hmm. And I think that's mm-hmm. true. It's mm-hmm. very much almost what Latin culture has brought to magical realism. It's a matter of taking the unusual and the strange and making it every day. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Southern Gothic focuses on. It doesn't sort of try to explain a lot of what happens. It's sort of that mindset of, well, these things happen here. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
It is.
So basically then, can you kind of give us a little bit of a tease of what your books are about? What it is you aim for when you're telling your story?
Well, what it is I aim for is, I think Southerners, we have a tradition of oral storytelling, and mm-hmm. I think that for me, first and foremost, it's about telling the story. It isn't always about necessarily perfect structure or following some of the rules of writing that you might find in instruction manuals on how to write this book or how to write well or how to write your novel.
Thank you. I like that. I like that because I think that we lose the storytelling in trying to reach perfection in the the structure of the story.
I agree. I think the focus of Southern Gothic is to make it feel like you are sitting there listening to a friend or a family member tell you this story. And no matter how odd or strange it is supposed to give you that feeling of I've been picked up and put right into the midst of this story, whether there's magic going on, whether there's hoodoo root working, whether there are unusual creatures. You want mm-hmm. to feel that you're smack dab in the middle of the American South when you read these stories. You want to feel that heat, that oppressive heat that seems to be nowhere else except in the South. Even though I live in England, I remember it very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this, I think, a tone that is prevalent in a lot of Southern Gothic. There's a bit of manners along with the mystery. Whenever I write, I always think of something that my grandmother used to say, even if you need to tell someone off, there's no need to be rude about it.
Hmm.
So there's a way of getting all of that across, and there's a way of interacting with the story and expressing the story that is mm-hmm. that may have horrific elements, but they can be presented mm-hmm. almost in an elegant way. And
right.
I think that's mm-hmm. what I try to portray in my writing.
Mm-hmm. I bet your grandmother used the classic time-earned saying of bless your heart. Or bless their heart quite a bit then.
She had so many sayings. I would love to get them all down at some point, but she's a huge inspiration for my writing, and she's mm-hmm. was one of those women that sort of no matter what she tried to do, she was always good at it. And it mm-hmm. was always so impressive to me. She could do five things at once and they all seemed to mm-hmm. turn out perfectly. And that may have been just, my way of seeing it as a young person, but mm-hmm. I always looked up to her, and a lot of what she communicated to me growing up mm-hmm. has stuck with me even now at my, mm-hmm. shall we say, advanced age.
I know that I'm a transplant to Southeast Texas, and my dad is retired Air Force, so I lived all over and everything, and so when I moved down here, I would hear women. When I thought they were kind of like calling somebody a dummy, they would go, oh, bless their heart. And I didn't mm-hmm. catch on until one day a lady explained to me, so honey, when they say that, they're saying you're a dumbass. I said, no.
Right, yes.
So that's like one of my favorite things to do now. It's like, okay, I'm Southern. I use that one. And there's so many other things. I just, like you said, you can be rather genteel and still slap somebody silly, And
absolutely.
I love a lot of I love the Southern, but I also love the Southern way of thinking, you know, and the laid back, you know, live and let live, you know. And so I could see where that would really play well in your type of stories that you write.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Okay. And I think that it is very much about the Southern mentality of things. And we Southerners are very laid back about most things until you say or do the absolute wrong thing to us.
Right.
And then all bets are off.
That's right. Until you get us, as they say, riled up.
Until you get us riled up, until you put a foot wrong, and then
right.
Then all bets are off completely.
That's exactly.
Lisa's good about that. I say Lisa's a little chihuahua when she gets all wound up. Woof, get out of her way. Okay. Now, you've won an award for one of your books, the Bram Stoker Award. You want to tell us about that?
Well, I technically
that?
Didn't
so
win.
Exciting. Oh,
technically, I
did.
Didn't win. I was the book was nominated for the award. It was on the Horror Writers Association's recommended reading list. So I technically didn't win, but I do have aspirations at some point of winning that award because it would look lovely on my mantelpiece. But
still,
I was honored, actually,
to
even... Yeah. Oh, I was honored, absolutely, to have the book on the recommended reading list because it's...
Mm-hmm.
Even to get that far for me, with it being a compilation of short stories, and I actually self-published that collection. So to have something that I put together myself... get to that point was a huge accomplishment.
Yes,
absolutely,
it was. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So now you're published traditionally and self-published, and you're doing both routes.
Yes.
Okay.
Which
tough question. Which do you prefer?
There are things that I like about both. With self-publishing, having total control is great, but it's also scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have beta readers, you can have friends or family read your work and say, is there anything you change? Do you like this? Do you like that? Give me feedback. But at the end of the day, it is your decision on, is my work ready for the public?
Right.
So there's a bit of nerves that are associated as far as I think with self-publishing. I like traditional publishing as well for certain work because it gives you a certain amount of validation that this piece of work is good enough for this editor or publisher to put their name on it and put their press behind you. But you do give up a little bit of control of, they tend to have certain types of covers that they like. Every publisher has certain styles of editing. So you have to understand that you may have to give up a little bit of that when you go traditionally published. But for something like Spook Lights, which is really near and dear to my heart, I wanted to have complete creative control, if you want to use that term, so that I wouldn't have to necessarily explain some of the traditions and some of the mentalities of the characters in the book, because I didn't want to have to water it down to make it too mainstream. I wanted it to feel very Southern.
Right.
Okay. And I didn't want to lose that.
Oh, I can totally understand. I had, when I was first going to publish, I sent my book off, you know, being a greenhorn, didn't understand, and this one got hold of it and said, oh, you great story idea, but you can't do this, you can't do that. And basically what they were telling me, I had to rewrite my story to the point where it wouldn't be the story anymore. And because I wasn't following the rules, like we were talking earlier, the rules.
Right.
And so I just said, well, forget it. I'm a little bit stubborn. I'll just wing it myself, you know. And it's been a hard road, you know, because when you're out there and you have no idea what you're doing, it's a tough learning curve. But
absolutely.
You know, you know. But you know, if you want to keep your story the way it is, that's the route you're going to have to take, and just hope for the best. You know, do your best job you can, and hope for the best. Now, can you give us a short synopsis of your spook night? Because it sounds interesting.
Well, Spook Lights, the first collection came out mid-2015. I have Spook Lights 2, which is my second set of stories that's coming out later this month, actually. Oh. I have it slated for, I think it's the 20th of January for it to be released. I wanted it to come out right around the time of February, Women in Horror Month, because that's a month where I spend a great deal of time promoting not just myself, but other women authors in horror and dark fantasy. I do reviews. I share links to books that I really love. And I wanted that collection to come out sort of at the beginning of all of that. So Spook Lights has short stories that are a combination of strong women, which I feel that really represents the era that I grew up in and the people that I grew up around. Very strong women characters. So if you like reading about strong women protagonists, this is definitely the collection for you. There's a lot of magic that is almost ritualized magic. A lot of times I think with Hollywood movies, they take conjure magic, whether it's root or hoodoo or voodoo or Santeria, and they make it what it isn't for the camera. And this is something that's it's not going to maybe have the flash and bloodletting and blood splatter that you might see in a Hollywood movie, but it's much closer to what would really happen in what we call laying a trick with hoodoo or laying a trick with root magic. So it's a little taste of that, as well as a few revenge stories thrown in as well, because I do love those.
But, you know, in all honesty, you don't need to have a whole lot of bloodletting and all that if it's a well-told story. You know, you can pull people into it with the suspense and the anticipation, you know, and the deep breaths, because you're, you know, all that, you know, you don't need to have all the gore. It's not necessary in every story.
I agree.
Some, yes, there are. Some there are, you know, you got to have it. But others, no. I think it takes away from the story if you overdo. If you do all of them with the blood and gore and all that, it just makes it nothing anymore. You know, you get, you need to keep it for places it needs to be. Other ones, you need to go a different route to get that punch. So.
And I think with Southern Gothic, it is a lot about atmosphere and setting the stage, and that can be the most powerful weapon in a writer's arsenal is really getting the right atmosphere and getting that atmosphere of creepy, eerie, foreboding that I think really is the Gothic style.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how many of us are, you know, more afraid of the idea of the unknown jumping out than actually seeing it?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You
and
know, and
I've seen all of those. I've seen all of those movies where it's a slasher or someone with a chainsaw or a knife running after you. At least you have something physical there to run away from. But when it isn't so clear cut and cut and dry, that can be even more unsettling.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I've always said that, you know, because horror movies or horror stories such as vampires, werewolves, things of that nature are, you know, just imagination. It's fiction. But voodoo is very real. I mean, those, you know, anything surrounding voodoo and that type of thing is very real. And it's very scary. And
it.
Yeah. So.
Well, I also wanted my stories to say that sometimes the people that are those magic practitioners that practice voodoo, that practice hoodoo and conjure magics, they're not always the bad people. Sometimes they are, you know, your protagonist. Sometimes they're the person that you're trying to get behind, and mm-hmm. the evil, if you want to use that term, the bad guy, the villain, mm-hmm. sometimes
right.
may be a person outside of that. A lot of times I've seen movies and television programs and even read books where it's, I don't know of a delicate way to say it, so I'm just going to say it to you ladies. It'll be fine.
Okay.
The magic is just portrayed as evil in and of itself, or the practice
mm-hmm.
is portrayed as evil in and of itself, and that's
mm-hmm.
what I really wanted to get away from. And
right.
I wanted to get away from that that impression that lots of readers and viewers seem to have of those magics, and
mm-hmm.
turn it on its head, really.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. I agree completely. You know, I mean, I think a lot of it comes from ignorance and not understanding, which makes things fearful to people. You know, they believe the things other people say. Oh, well, that's bad. They're evil. They're, you know, whatever. Instead of opening
yeah.
their own mind and exploring it themselves, doesn't mean you have to want to practice it. Doesn't mean you have to even want to be part of it. But,
right.
you know, you should open your mind enough to realize that just because one person says it's bad does not necessarily mean it's true. You've got to go by the person's actions. You know, if
right.
they're doing
Absolutely.
Things, if they're not hurting anybody, if they're not hurting anybody, you know, I've known several women throughout the years that, you know, pagans and, you know, and believe in doing different things. And I never saw any negativity come from them. Everything they wanted to do was positive. And
mm-hmm.
so how is that evil in my mind? So,
mm-hmm.
you know, as long as you're not trying to hurt people or sacrificing, you know, children, you're not bad.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
right.
Okay. Now, what is, now I know I'm going to probably slaughter it again, but what is Geechee people? And
Gullah Geechee is when slaves were first brought to the United States, mostly in, there's some parts of southern North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
but it's mostly, it's a lot of South Carolina and Georgia coastline. A lot of people have stayed in that area and didn't move out of the American South when emancipation and Juneteenth happened. A lot of people fled north and fled west, but the people that stayed
mm-hmm.
in the South, almost isolated from the rest of the world, those
mm-hmm.
people are the Gullah Geechees. That's what my grandfather was. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of those traditions have stayed as they were 300-400 years ago. The way
wow.
fishing and shrimping and crabbing is done on some of those islands that my grandfather grew up on, it's still
mm-hmm.
done the same way today. And unfortunately, the Gullah Geechee people are suffering now because a lot of their land is being purchased for developments, golf courses and shopping malls and things like that.
That's
so
very sad.
I wanted to
yeah.
try and bring attention to the plight of the people that still live there and are trying desperately to hold on to their land
mm-hmm.
against
mm-hmm.
the huge corporations that are trying to come in and purchase land out from under them. So
mm-hmm.
those are the people that I grew up around. Those are
mm-hmm.
the places that I go to visit when I go home to Charleston, because I do still
mm-hmm.
consider Charleston as a huge part of me. And
mm-hmm.
it's all, to me, I think it's always probably going to be home. I
right.
did an interview
mm-hmm.
with M. Lamar, who is an amazing musician, and I did it on Dirge Magazine. You'll see that on my profile, my bio. And
mm-hmm.
he's originally from the South, even though he lives now in, I believe it's Brooklyn, and tours all over the world. He was in Copenhagen when I spoke with him. But he's originally from the South, and when I spoke with him, it was like talking to someone that I'd known for years, and something he said to me was amazingly powerful. He said, being Southern never leaves you.
True.
But I'm not sure I want it to. So no matter
mm-hmm.
where you go, there's that part of you, of being a Southerner, that's always there.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that that's something that always finds its way into my work, even if I see a call for submissions and it's, can you write a sci-fi story? Can you write an erotic romance story? And I'll sit there and go, yeah, I can do this. And it somehow comes out with that tone or with that slight undertone of Southernism to it. And it's not intentional. Mm-hmm. I think it just happens.
Well, our stories reflect our inner soul. No matter, you know, what we write, what genre, there's always going to be a part of us in them. So that makes complete sense. You know, that your Southern would come out. I have noticed one thing, though, since I moved to Southeast Texas. Now, we're not considered Deep South, of course, you know, but there's a real pride in being from the South. I've noticed people. It's a real pride, and it's like this brotherhood, you know. It's like us against them.
Right.
I find it really nice in a way that, you know, when you go in the store and people actually make eye contact with you and smile and say, hey, how you doing, you know, or, you know, when you're driving, you know, you get the one finger wave from the steering wheel, and I'm not talking the center finger, I'm talking the index finger, you know,
right.
You know, just kind of saying, hey, how you doing, you know, and those types of things, there seems to be a much more, I don't know if it's a need or an interest or just inbred thing that, we have that they want to stay in contact with each other. Am I saying that properly?
Right.
You know,
Southern hospitality. Yeah.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I was raised in Tennessee, and I live in Mississippi now, and I've traveled to, you know, different parts of the world and different parts of America. And you're right. I mean, it's different. It's unique. It's a place of its own, the South, you know. It's called Southern Hospitality,
and there's that sort of acknowledgement that you get only in the South. And I've lived in other parts of the United States as well. I used to work in D.C. I've had to go to New York, to Miami for training, for jobs. And it's only coming back to the South where you get that sort of either the inclination of the head or the little nod or, like you said, the index finger wave. It is. Mm-hmm. It's an acknowledgement of, you know, sort of an I see that you are another person. I've seen your face around. I might not know you, but you're still deserving of acknowledgement. And you don't get that everywhere. That's true.
No, you don't.
You don't. It's really nice to see that interaction between people, you know, of all ages. Even the young ones will do it somewhat, you know. Not as much as, you know, 30 plus. But, you know, I was, you know, going to the grocery store and, you know, you hear all this stuff on the news and nobody's getting along and everything. And I thought, well, I'm going to test it. And I went and everybody I saw in the store, I looked at and I smiled to see if I was going to get it returned. And I did. You know, it didn't matter who they were, age or anything. So I'm like, okay, this is cool. My little corner of the world is safe. Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing about the young people are, or at least in, I'm 49, so, but I was raised to say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir, you know, to my adults, you know, around me. So that is bred in, at least in my generation it was, you know.
That was bred in me as well. And even now when I reach out to a publisher or an editor or whoever and they say, oh, send your story in for this call for submissions, it's very – I write very formally and I always address it to Mr. or Ms., whoever the person is. And they'll always come back and say, oh, call me by my first name, it's fine. But there's that sort of, I don't know, just an inbred formality, I think, that a lot of Southerners have.
Right.
Well, it's called respect, you know. It's called respect, so that's a good thing. All right. Now, can you tell us about your short stories that are coming out here in the recent future?
I have, as I mentioned, Spooklights 2 is coming out. The second collection, there's still the atmospheric description of the South and locations. There are a few historical pieces. Mm-hmm. There are a few pieces that, as I mentioned earlier, about the plight of the Gullah Geechee that I wrote specifically inspired by that story. Mm-hmm. But I think I've gotten away from mostly revenge stories as I did with the first one. So I think there's a lot more magical realism, a lot more of the strange and unusual and the grotesque, which is very much a hallmark of Gothic writing. And mm-hmm. I have a short story coming out with the anthology is called Sycorax's Daughters, and that's coming out in February, I'm assuming also for Women in Horror Month and Black History Month, because that collection is, I'm so excited about that one. It's all black women horror fiction and poetry writers. So that,
wow.
that took a bit for me to say correctly. So it was the brainchild of three other amazing women that are putting this entire anthology together and editing it and promoting it and finding a publisher for it. So it was definitely a labor of love for them. And that's finally coming out in February of this year. So I'm looking forward to that happening also. And
oh, wow.
I'm one of the founders of a group called Colors in Darkness. We have a website. We have a Facebook page. And the purpose of Colors in Darkness was to get authors of color who write dark fiction together to just have a place to discuss stories, because a lot of times publishers are not always looking for something different when it comes to horror stories. Sometimes they just want variations on a theme, so sometimes it's difficult as an author of color to feel confident in your stories because you may get them rejected a lot because they aren't what publishers are used to seeing. So it's really about being a support system to say, we'll read your story, we'll help you polish it. We might even have suggestions of where you should send it to get it published, mm-hmm. or maybe if you want to self-publish it, here are some cover artists. So we're mm-hmm. finally putting out our first anthology, which mm-hmm. is called Forever Vacancy. So that's coming out on Friday the 13th, actually, of this month.
Oh, wow. Perfect release date.
So we're looking forward to that. So that's right now what I have coming out, but steadily working. I don't make New Year's resolutions, but I am starting a schedule of writing so that I will stay on track to get more of my work out in 2017. So I think the only other thing that I have that might be coming out, because they haven't announced the release date yet, but it's called Shadows Over Main Street 2, and it's all Lovecraftian small town horror. So I'm assuming that the first volume did really, really well. I read it and I thought it was amazing. So mm-hmm. volume 2 should be coming out at some point. I don't know exactly when because the publisher hasn't announced it, but be on the lookout for it because there are some really great names associated with it. So happy to be listed among those.
That's very exciting news. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of how you started the organization of women working together, you know. It's so hard nowadays to make it. And if you have others that are on your side, you know, that are willing to work together, that's a good thing. And so I like the idea that you've done that. That's a wonderful thing. I know Lisa and I lean on each other. Lisa and I lean on each other all the time.
These are wonderful, wonderful ladies. They're all writers in their own right and are amazing creatives. And mm-hmm. I think when you find someone to work with that really does support you and helps you be better at what you do, I think that's, mm-hmm. those are definitely the people that you want to be around and stick around, because it is challenging. And writing can be, it can be tough.
Oh, exactly.
Having that support system is great. So it's been a long road to get the anthology done, but we've done it.
Yeah.
And having those that care enough about you to be brutally honest.
Yes.
Yes. But you also have to be receptive to that honesty as well.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because it took me a while to understand, you know, I was young and stupid, but it took me a while to realize that you're not doing anyone a favor and no one's doing you a favor if they sugarcoat, you know, your review or if they sugarcoat what they feel about your stories, you know. So,
yep. That was one thing Lisa and I told each other from day one. Mm-hmm. We would be brutally honest with each other. And we did it out of love and respect, you know.
Right.
And if she has something and she wants me to read it and I rip it to shreds, she knows I'm not doing it to be mean. And vice versa.
Absolutely.
If she rips something of mine up, you know, I know she's not doing it to be mean, you know. Because sometimes we get caught up in writing something and we may think it's really wonderful, but somebody reads it and they're like, oh, what the heck? You know?
Yes. Because sometimes
in your mind,
it doesn't translate to the page. Yet.
Right. And I think that's one of the bad things about being self-published, especially for new authors, because, you know, you think that your work is just, you know, as a new author, you think, oh, you know, it's perfect, it's great, it's fantastic, you know. And then, you know, so I like having someone, a buffer or someone, you know, behind me telling me, you know, that really stinks, you know. You know, because it causes me to clean my stuff up, you know, and to be better. So.
Yes, and that's part of what Colors in Darkness does as well. We offer beta reading. Mostly it's for shorter pieces, for short stories, but a lot of times people haven't ever had anyone outside of a parent read their work.
Mm-hmm.
And at least I know my mother, she and my father, they would both, oh, it's great, you know,
you're
just
right.
to be encouraging.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
right.
sometimes you have to find someone that's going to say, this entire section needs a rework, or I didn't understand what you meant here. And that's part of what we try to do, because we really do want people to succeed, and we want their work to be praised and to get great reviews and get awards and nominated for prizes and all that good stuff. So most of the time, that's not going to be your first draft.
Right.
Oh, God, no.
True. Are you second? Are you third?
Yeah, exactly.
We think they're ready, but, you know, most of the time it's not ready, you know.
No. So. Well, Lisa and I have learned that you write your book, you set it aside, then you go back and you read it and you find all that stuff you thought was so wonderful at that time and really needs to be rethought, you know.
Right.
Absolutely.
How fun. So then, give us a little bit of a synopsis of your Spooky Light 2 then. What's kind of in there? What have you got going?
Oh, gosh. I think with Spook Light specifically, or with the... in general with the anthologies?
However you want to do it, with your Spook Light 2,
I think that the main difference between the first one and the second one is I let myself go a little bit more. Spook Lights, the first one, is stories that I've written. It was half stories that I had published before, and half stories that I'd written brand new that hadn't ever seen the light of day. And with Spook Lights 2, they are almost all brand new stories, which, oh my gosh, I'm terrified. So I've only had two of the stories in Spook Lights 2 published before. As you were saying, it gives you that buffer to have a story that's already been published before. So it's almost as if it's been blessed by someone else. So the majority of stories in Spook Lights 2 are brand new. So huge leap of faith for me there. But it's I've embraced, I think, the strangeness and the grotesqueness a little bit more. I think in the year and a half since the first one came out, I've tried to be more confident with my writing and not second-guess myself so much. I think as an author, the more you write, probably the more you do anything, you try to become a bit more confident with what you do and believe in your voice and what you have to say a little bit more. So
right.
I'm trusting myself a little bit more with this collection. So there's less explanation of how this magic works and how this particular ritual is done, and it's much more of I'm going to tell you this story and let you experience it. And I think I'm hoping that it's a good result of the amount that I've been writing and having a bit more surety behind what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll still get the strange and the unusual and the horror and the grotesque, but it's less time spent on here's exactly why this happens and where this comes from. And it's
right.
Here you go. And you've been presented with the plate instead of me taking you through the recipe.
Right.
That makes sense, because if you covered both of that in number one, there's really no sense in repeating it in number two.
That's true.
So that makes a lot of sense. Wow, cool. Okay, folks, you know what you got to go get then. You got to go get these Spook Lights, one and two. Well, we're running low on time here. Can you tell us a little bit about the Graveyard Shift Sisters, or if we already covered that one? Did we cover that yet?
I don't think we have. Okay. Graveyard Shift Sisters is a website, blog. Ashley Blackwell is the founder and owner of Graveyard Shift Sisters, and she's a huge film buff, which is where most of her posts originated and how she started Graveyard Shift Sisters. She wanted to see more black women in horror movies and more of us surviving the horror movie, technically. But I reached out to her one day and said, well, I noticed you have a lot of film, but you don't have a great deal of books. Would you be interested in me writing a few reviews of books for your site? And she said, absolutely. So I started reading and reviewing and interviewing a lot of these women that people who read horror may not hear those names or have heard of those names. So it was just to bring more visibility to women writers of horror, and women writers that are people of color of horror and dark fantasy, because I don't think that typically, since they are self-published authors, a lot of them, they don't get the visibility that I really think that they should, because there's some fantastic work out there that may not have quite hit mainstream, and that's really why I write the articles that I do for Graveyard Shift Sisters.
Well, that's good, because I tell you what, being self-published, you know, just in the short time I've been self-published, I got first published in 2011, and it was so much easier to reach people then. Now it's like the market is so flooded. You know, you go on Amazon and there's like thousands and thousands. You know, I always joke and say it reminds me of years ago, you could walk down the aisle in the store and you knew what box of cereal you wanted because there was so many you could choose from. Now you walk down the aisle and there's like 10 times, 100 times more, and you just kind of stand there going, oh,
right.
My God, I don't know which one I want. You grab the Old Faithful, stick it in your basket, and you walk off because it's just, you're just overwhelmed with choice.
Right.
And I think that's a problem with our publishing today is that, you know, it's hard to stand out of the crowd. So, you know, doing something like that is going to help a lot. Get, you know, get the women noticed in their work and everything. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know, so how many people are involved in this?
Goodness, I think that Ashley probably has about 4 or 5 people that write articles for her as they're able.
Mm-hmm.
I know that she's set up a patron account as well to
mm-hmm.
help with funding all of these projects, because a lot of times it, you know, everybody has day jobs, essentially, so
mm-hmm.
it definitely is a labor of love to take
mm-hmm.
out of your free time to contact these people, watch their movies, read their books, set up an interview, whether it's via email or via Skype or whatever have you. So it's about 4 of us that are able
mm-hmm.
to send her articles, interviews, book reviews, film reviews, as we're able to do them and still sort of keep up with our daily lives as well.
Wow, that's really pretty good.
Which can
good,
be a
though,
challenge.
That's really pretty good, though. You know, that's a good number of people to kind of get it going and everything. Now, you do know that this show, once we're done, I'll be able to, I'm going to make it into a YouTube video, and I'll have it on our YouTube channel. So if you want to use it for anything, we'll have your pictures, and of course we'll have the audio, and if you want to use it for anything like that, you're more than welcome to. That's something we
do
for our
guests. I will have it all over my Twitter and my Facebook and all of those good things.
Yeah, anything to help get the word out. That's what I'm here for, you know.
That's right.
You know, we love the men authors, but we're kind of partial to the ladies because we're ladies
mm-hmm.
ourselves. And, you know, and when you write in the darker genres, we kind of have a harder time standing out. You know.
You do.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I think that's why so many women use initials. You know, I write dark thrillers, and I would say, we should use Linda. Well, that's who I am. Oh, no, you should use initials because, you know, people don't want to think, you know. I'm like, no. So, you know, we have to stand up in what we believe, and, you know, you doing that, and, you know, Lisa and I doing this show and everything. But those girls, we can be strong.
Right.
And I think that women bring something special to horror. And
mm-hmm.
I don't certainly knock anyone that decides to use their initials as their
mm-hmm.
pen name. I think that's fine if you want to
mm-hmm.
do it. But I think that we as women should definitely be proud for
mm-hmm.
embracing
mm-hmm.
what we write, regardless of whether it's horror or dark fantasy or dark science fiction or whatever it happens to be. I think
mm-hmm.
that we are uniquely created to be aware of the horrors of life and be able to present them in film and in writing, because
right.
I'm sure as women, we've all had horror stories just from living every day as a woman. And I think that that brings a unique perspective to the genre.
Yes, it does. And we can be just as dark and twisted as the guys, too. So don't ever think we can.
Sure we can.
Oh, absolutely.
I've got it, yeah.
Well, gosh darn, we're burning down our minutes here. Do you have anything that you'd like to share with us before we have to call it a show? Anything else?
I just want to say thank you so much for being accommodating with the time zone difference. And for doing this show ahead of time with me, it's absolutely
no
wonderful to talk with you. And I appreciate the time that you took to do this and broadcast it later. And to say, you know, thanks to your listeners for putting up with a show that's pre-recorded.
Oh, no problem.
If anybody has any questions for me, they can certainly reach out to me on social media. I'm usually really responsive. Mostly probably on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody has any questions or suggestions or wants to actually request from me my favorite women authors in horror. I have tons of them. So if you're looking for stuff to read by women horror authors and you want a recommendation, shout out to me on Twitter and I'll be happy to share.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah. Here you go, folks.
Yep.
Go check her out. Like I said, we have the links here. We'll have them on the YouTube video also, and we'll also have them on our website, deadlyreads.com. So you have no excuse not to hook up with her because we'll have her links everywhere. So anyway, Lisa and I want to thank you so much for coming on today. You have been an absolute joy. And
absolutely my pleasure.
It's always fun to talk to another gal. We enjoy it very much.
Another Southern gal, that's sweet.
Yeah. So you take care over there in London and enjoy your life in the countryside writing your Southern Gothic horror book. Woohoo!
Thank you so much for having me again, and I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you much. We hope to talk to you again someday, and you take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. She was fun. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Her work sounds very, very interesting.
It does sound interesting. I like the Southern Gothic. I don't think I've ever heard of that before, so that's interesting.
It is. It's something totally new. I've never heard of it either. So it does sound like a lot of fun. Okay, folks.
It does.
Well, this is our first show of the year. We're going to be on next week. It will be a live show on Thursday night. I'm trying to get to the file. You have the guest name because I'm trying to get to the phone. My computer's being slow. Oh, well. Anyway.
I can pull it up real quick on my calendar.
And but starting on the 19th, Lisa and I are going down to half-hour shows. We're going to be like the sitcom type thing. We're going to get done in 30 minutes. So get ready for that. We're going to have fun.
It's Angela Campbell will be on our show next week. She's a reviewer and an editor.
There you go. So join us here next week, Thursday night, 9 p.m. Central Time. And everybody have a good week, and we'll see you then. Good night, everybody.
Good night.